The nice thing about this was that I've had this feeling about incorporating this as well for a long time, this desire to constantly return and connect with the visual arts, but always feeling a little bit like the uncle kid in the room or something. And it was really refreshing to get an email for me and say, just got this question about dance and the gallery and why it doesn't happen more, or what is it about? And do you want to come test some of those things? It was just so refreshing to get that, to be approached instead of to feel like you're having to constantly prove something. But in saying that, Mel sent us two really great writings that became initially really high, really important for us in terms of prodding some ideas. So yeah, we gently address Zach's work, but in a kind of with a sense of a bigger picture of this question of dance in the gallery or in the museum. And inherently then, questions of dance itself arise, which are questions that we ask ourselves anyway. That's my introduction. Oh, sorry, I know that's not really, that wasn't what we planned. That's just a kind of like bad vibe.
No way of bringing up issues of script and of improvisation.
Yeah, we actually today I created the title of this, which is this is not a performance lecture. Because yeah, we really want to make it clear that the outcomes of this week are not about we haven't made a show. We've developed some tests that we think raise some discussion points, really. And were tests to force us to remain in that place of asking questions, as opposed to doing things that we just, oh, well, that would be nice, that would look good, or something like that, and going off on a tangent, and we were trying to be quite strict.
Julia and I have got quite a long professional career. We've known each other for about 15 years, and all our training has been together. And there's obvious benefits and drawbacks to that. One, we've got a close working relationship and a deep understanding of some fundamental things about what we do, but also those things are sometimes inescapable. Regarding what Julia was saying about dance having a long relationship with the visual arts, it is true, and you will all know examples of those contexts. But so we're really interested to come into the space and explore some of our interests that relate to that without feeling beholden to the rules of the world of visual arts, or trying to take what we do and fit it into that mold. So it's more of an interest and appreciation and observation, but we really want to maintain and understand more deeply and critically what it is about dance that is valuable and distinct. Because it's very easy because we know there's such a thing as performance art and the visual arts, and it's very easy to drift into those concerns. But what is distinct about dance as opposed to that is what we're interested in.
And something else, I guess, is that, you know, we're not the first people to ask these questions, like we're not kind of being naive about this. We have some concerns and desires about where we want our practice to go, and how we would like it to look, but it has to go through this points for us to get there with that, like, and yeah, it's not something that you can just do, it has to be.
Yeah.
Well, what can you just do?
Do what?
Well, do you want to come? Why do this evolution process?
Well, I think because it would be a little bit like, I feel like it would be pretending that we would claim to be the first people to do something like that.
Well, it's sort of like saying, why don't you fly a plane?
Well,
we know what will happen. Well, yeah. I'm making assumptions here, of course.
Yeah.
But it's for that reason that I'll go to a quote, because there's something that the philosopher Trevor Alva, I keep calling him Trevor. It's Trev to me until I meet him. Talks about regarding dance. He says that perception and action have traditionally been seen as separate things. That it actually occurs and you perceive it happening. It's sort of like they're closely related. But for him, they're one and the same. The analogy he uses is looking at a painting, an unfamiliar painting, or an unfamiliar artwork. You look at it, and you don't immediately make sense of it necessarily. It might appear flat, unfamiliar. The gestures might be unfamiliar. But in time, something happens. You talk to someone about it. They provide you a little bit more context. You walk closer, you walk away. You think about it, and then this thing happens where you understand it better. And he says that that's true of nearly all human experience, that the world comes into focus as a dynamic of trying to make sense of it. And he says that dance, and this is where I think it relates directly to what we're trying to achieve here, dance is an enactment or a modelling of this fundamental fact about our relationship with the world around us, that we're trying to present not action for you to perceive, we're trying to actually present the perception of us doing action. So in that, what I'm trying to say is that perception is the important thing, our perception of what we're doing, not the semiotics of the shapes, not the historical cultural language of the shapes. Our experience of them is somehow fundamental to
And it requires observation of when that's occurring and when it's not occurring, which has happened for us all week. And you can, you go down a path of practicing, and even in that practice, you go, we've lost the essence of that perception. So, what are the factors that give you that?
And this is true. This isn't distinct from your experience of the everyday world. You're all perceiving and actioning at the same time. So to draw a distinction between what dancers are trying to do is they're actually trying to craft a greater understanding of a deeper perception, a deeper sensitivity, and able to perceive more deeply, just as we all perceive different things that we understand. For us, it's vocabulary, movement, space and time, specifically.
And so we might not talk too much, or we might show you some things. Gotta be careful about talking too much, but I guess that we're gonna show you three tests and sort of the evolution of those tests to a certain extent. And one of the tests addresses this space in particular. The next test is about time, and also is connected to the film in the other room. And the third set of tests are about vocabulary, which gently relate to this. So we can have a bigger conversation about that later, but we will show you some tests.
And just in the interest of time management, I'm going to set an alarm. So when it's over, it's over.
Yes. No. I think we'll stop there. Because, so, yeah, what happens, can I say that now? It feels like that's the thing that we should say. The uses of no's are obviously blatant judgments on each other. And, well, they're not blatant judgments on each other, but they are about saying, yes, this works in this space, and that there are inherent, potentially, you know, you start to build a catalogue of static gesture that works in this space, in this context. And
initially, we called the exercise as something that exists already in dance practice. We do it with first year students at UniTech. And we first called it indulging your subjective aesthetic. Basically, don't think about it too much, no critical thought. What's your gut feeling?
When you say yes or no,
as opposed to... When you say yes or no, you might think, well, that's kind of subjective, but there are, and we're wondering if there are universal principles or things people don't understand, and of course there are, because we know when something is symmetrical, we like it. We know when something is framed by something in space, we like it.
But when we first got into the space, we didn't necessarily quite know what was going to work, and so we found ourselves saying yes and no quite a lot. And even what comes up when you're given a no, then you thought, like, yes, maybe a little bit. But then I realised that we're maybe getting quite good. We sort of start to know actually what works in the space and what doesn't. So for the record, I did do some no's that I knew were no's, just to kind of show. Blake, that was blatant, to show you what was
going on.
That can be a challenge. So, kind of like Alvin always says, you know, at first you see the thing and you don't understand it, and it influences you. After a while, beginning to develop a sort of a familiarity and start to question, why is it a yes or a no? And then it becomes very hard to say no, because you've got to find yourself a good reason to do it. So we've developed this exercise a couple of ways, and in the next two versions we'd like to invite you to try to just silently in your own time say yes or no to what we proposed. The other element of the next step is we want to move, we're dancers. We want to find a way of moving in order to perceive the space better. So there was architectural, what can we do with this? Gestural. Should we break into it?
Yeah.
Got the time right. Yes.
Yeah, so it's sort of like a... Yeah, and then I find it really hard to not go, yes, you know.
Yeah, we're supposed to maintain a sort of like a Zen-like impassivity or something and be very serious, yes. But the two things we found with that are we started to notice that the rules were that we appreciated each other's offer from the point of space where we made our last offer. Actually, no, the first thing happened is we were able to walk and have a look and find whether it was a yes or not. But then we found that if we stayed in a fixed spot, it really affected us. For example, like either the torsion in the body, or maybe even the fact that I couldn't even see the complete picture, that really influenced. The other thing we noticed after showing someone the first version and the second version is, was an aversion to certain types of vocabulary of movement. That some things were perceived as authentic, or fitting, or real. Oh God, that's how long we're supposed to do it for, poor you. Thank you, Mikael. And other things were theatrical and therefore inappropriate or undesirable, which is a problem for us because it brings up a question of appropriate vocabulary and the viewer. We know, but we kind of know what's what, don't we? We know why people respond in that way. Did anyone find themselves saying no strongly to anything in particular? No.
Yes.
Yes.
Good, thank God. You would hope so. I have to use Deegan as an example because he was our only example. That you know, can you explain sort of what you sort of like perceive the difference between the ones that were yeses for you?
I think the ones that were like interacting, for example, like the curtain, I found that really, like, I don't know, there's something about that that would be electrical, and it was like sort of the way in which you manipulated, whereas like the things in the space, like the wall, where you made sounds, like they're more deliberate, whereas that sort of felt like, oh, there's a thing. I'm going to use it. But the other one more deliberate and like powerful, I think.
So there's that, but there's also things that don't seem to engage with the space whatsoever that seem like are acting.
Is it that good TV?
The space itself, like leaning against the wall, has tension.
Yeah.
A body within a framing has a certain type, another type of tension. So yeah, and other things just seem to be sort of lost somehow.
Yeah, whereas like when they create tension like that, just kind of we're interested in working in a place where the you don't have to labour over an action or spell it out. I mean, that's kind of what you mean a little bit by theatricality. Mm-hmm. It's like another layer of maybe what we want you to think or something like that, where other things have inherent meaning or response that isn't such a force or squeeze out of you.
So there's a space that the space is almost offering to you rather than you bringing in too much.
Yeah, and that's quite an important thing in general. I think I find it making material in whatever way it is about taking yourself out of yourself a little bit, like and that's sort of what happened with the sculpture exercise, even though we did an exercise that didn't really, wasn't something that we kind of continued on with, but it's an exercise whereby Paul did it to me, we put me in certain forms, and they're forms that I would not necessarily choose to take myself, so therefore they became more interesting, or with the space and movement, how you respond. This is sort of feeling outward thinking as opposed to inward and judging, but being really clear and strict about what you're going to bring in front of them, to think, oh, I'm just feeling the space or something like that.
So what kind of issue, when you get into marriages, when you originally set things up, there'll be times when you agree, you get a no, and you think, yeah, that's great. And another time you'll be quite attached to the movement, thinking it was really good. So what do you find you want to retaliate at that point, going no back to that?
The range of possibilities for interactions are endless, because the other thing is we often, I don't know if you've already seen, we often find ourselves saying no, unless you kind of just shift a tiny bit, or yes, but that down there is not so great. There's something about like this presenting stuff in this way that kind of shines an unfair light on the importance of what you're doing, when really it's only a means of investigation of finding another way of doing something else. There's the exercise in itself has no inherent value.
Yeah, we wouldn't use this exercise.
I think what we're trying to show is give you a sort of a sense of like the way it can turn into something.
And that there is certain aesthetic values and connections that are made.
Yeah. So should we show the vision number three?
Yeah, it's not there. Well, do you want to skip to the experiment?
No, okay, we're getting it.
Yeah, okay.
So we need two volunteers. Julia had expressed an interest in developing this idea of the perspective, of the commentary coming from and being relative to the commenter's place in space, but also having the audience involved in a slightly greater way, and also having the audience be viewable or seeable or observable.
Yeah, I felt like, well, we're not in the theatre, you're not fixed to a point. If you're observing an artwork, you freely move around it, you take it from different perspectives. Probably like for this one, Zach, he lays out the paper, which, without it's not forcing you to, but he likes the idea that you would go around, you have to move through the space to see them. And so I was kind of interested in employing that. But we've never tried it, so we would like to test it on you guys now.
Yeah, all you have to do is say yes and no, it's not too hard. Okay, yes.
Yes.
And one more. So we're going to play the game. You will play with Julia. You will play with me. We're going to make offers in space. And what we want you to do is choose somewhere from which to say yes or no. So instead of just standing there watching me move around the room, your perspective also changes.
Yeah, you go to where you like the look of it, and you say yes.
Yeah.
At which point you will stop.
To do something else.
Well, or we're going to overlap as well.
Well, it's just unrelated.
We'll just go.
Okay. Don't find a point for me right now saying yes.
Then you say no.
Don't try too hard.
No. Yes.
No. Mugging for a yes, sort of like a little seal. I don't know what that was. So, but that's useful as well. That's useful to understand that in this communication there's an element of power that is really tangible and can be, whether it's ethical or not, manipulated. Because choreographers. You know, they do things in order to evoke a response, and I think fundamentally that's what we're interested in as well. How to do that, or how to do it more efficiently, maybe how to do it ethically, I don't know.
And even like with a test like that, that probably wasn't it was the experiment, but then I think we put in the conversation where actually people find that test quite a lot, and that's more of probably be closer to what.
Yeah.
Duration definitely is a beautiful segue into what we're about to do.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So that was space. Now we do time.
Accordingly. And this brought up two really great things for us. One, the fact that we're dealing with time all the time, but also specifically for me, my interest in that is that it's the problem of making movement vocabulary and how all vocabulary that we have, in my mind, is cultured in some way. There is no such thing as natural movement.
Six, seven, eight, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
interested in engaging a little bit more with the work itself. It brings up issues of vocabulary. Okay, so the heart rate is affecting my capacity to talk.
Did you talk about the canary?
I talked about the canary a little bit, but the frame rate, you know, directly, you know, so there's a really direct, it isn't an interpretation of the work. I think that's key. It's a way of, we're trying to find ways of dealing with the bones of the work, the methodologies you use, the methods, the tricks, the tropes, and relate them to what we do. And I talked a little bit about how vocabulary is a problem for me, and that when we talk about authentic movement, in my mind I can only whittle it down to involuntary bodily functions, most of which are not that interesting, but the heart actually has at least a muscularity to it, as opposed to the things that are sliding around and squirting. We won't worry about those. It's involuntary, but we can influence it. So what Judy actually did was...
got her heart rate up.
So we can actually demonstrate, you know, her controlled deceleration, which is measurable in time. The funny thing is, when we decided to do this exercise, we didn't have anything to do it with. We didn't have any moves. So we recycled something.
Yeah, so we all showed something we talked a little bit about this week. Because of this exact process, the poem is something that had been passed down from his mother through his uncle, who had only spoken it, so it was his mother's memory of it. And then he, I think, wrote and crafted a little bit more beyond that. And so we're kind of interested in the idea of re-offering something that we've done in the past and trying to readdress that in another context.
And also, you talked earlier about the fact that most dance vocabularies
is a re-offering.
Are re-offering in some way or another.
And we also went as far as to, like, so Mel given us an essay which talked about some of the kind of really famous big names who have done works in galleries, and a few of them were artists representing works that had originally been for the stage in the museum. And they're works that we're familiar with, or artists that we're familiar with. And so we're also, at one point, you might just learn a bit of, if you're a little bit around the writers, but that didn't happen. But I think it was kind of an interesting thing, and it is like almost the thing about talking about culture, is that nothing that you do is really for me, it's always about the culture and the education. And yeah, and so the heart rate seems to be the thing that we could find out the rest of the question for the last one.
Thank you.
wears
just proving that you're business to me. Means to an end. You know, it's something in itself. It's an offering. It measures time in a way.
It's kind of space and time with walking as the vocabulary.
But you won't. We sort of like thought about like what other.
Without us controlling it, sort of.
What the next step might be. You know, what happens when I get to 100, go back and we meet at that same number?
Yeah,
what happens?
I can stop.
When I find that. That point in time where I've left Julia.
Could you re-accelerate or And I think the other thing that I realised as I'm running downstairs is talking about perception, duration, depending on what you're doing, can either seem like eternity or can be brief. So and for us, you know, I guess time's almost the most important one because it's a time based
it's a tangent, but like stress really affects your cognitive ability.
Like, I think that's what it is. Paul's not fit and then he just gets a bit more stressed. It's harder.
Oh no. Breathe through your nose, young. So do we need to just move on? Oh no, we've got an experiment thing to try. We just want you to all find your heart rate. And when I say go, counts to 20 out loud.
50. 20.
20.
30.
30, okay. Have you got it?
Yeah.
Okay.
2.
Wait. 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
sorry, maybe you want to have a voice out here, please. But I've been thinking about conjuration.
Where at that moment is only up to 12, right?
No, we've got all the inscriptions.
Okay. See, I've never done puffed before, so this is interesting in itself for me. We were just saying beforehand how in some way this format destroys everything we've ever worked for. In this, you know, a little bit. Like, so I'm just being
prompt. Yeah, as soon as we introduce vocabulary, you do it once and then you try and do it again, and you overthink a little bit, and then you put it, add another kind of thing to it, and you go, oh, now I'm like got defaced, or I started like adding that, or all this other crap that comes into it, and so we keep trying to, it's not very professional, and so, yeah, so this one we could just do, like we tried to do it counts, which really, flatlined it.
We found this funny, interesting thing. Well, that we could.
Hang on, please.
Well, I just feel like it's
relevant. Okay.
To say that we could have dealt with the themes of the poem, the themes of the exhibition, but something that like I can connect to personally as a dancer is the fact that the elements that make up a language are quite often don't have any real inherent meaning in themselves, like the letters in a word are no different to the moves of the dance. It's in the context that they become relevant and communicable. So in the practice of trying to create a vocabulary like this, we found there's a point where we lost sight of the movements that we generated and they begin to devolve.
Could evolve, but they also can devolve, and just being aware of what's going on, being aware of if that's what you're choosing to do, or that's just what's happening.
For this one, I think people can move now.
You may move now.
So choose somewhere, we'll get it right next time, but choose somewhere to watch this one.
Are you going to go to
the next day? We're
going to stay where we are. Oh, you are? Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
I will show you this one in
inches. We are in inches.
Maintain meaning in movement
some meaning, whatever meaning it is, even if it's small meaning, try to maintain that throughout dance, because in our experience, it always disappears. By the time we perform a dance, almost without fail, we wouldn't be able to tell you the source of most of the material that we're doing, because it has been through such a process of stress and corruption, sometimes for good, sometimes for bad, that it makes us question it.
Why do it at all?
Why do it at all? When it doesn't have any inherent value other than.
And that brings, like, I think so often people feel like they didn't need something, quite often because they just the results of the treatment through the process. Not, yeah. We've got one more.
Complication, we've got two more. So one way to try to maintain that sense of presence and attention to it is to complicate the hell out of it and make it hard for our brain, even though just like in this note, yeah, eventually we will transcend that, you know, our nervous systems will catch up. We will be able to do it while eating breakfast. It won't be challenging anymore, and then that perception that we're trying to maintain and measure will evaporate a little later. But we've got a couple of things to show you. Not that it doesn't happen serendipitously dance performance, because some of the things that we find we're relying on and use are things that we use all the time.
Yeah, and in some ways, like all these things we're talking about, you use all the time without thinking, and so we're just kind of, it sort of feel a little bit like the same correlative in 101, but sort of for ourselves in a way, yeah, to be able to pull it apart, because we did this exercise, we looked at each other and we did the sculpture thing, and we realised that there was a problem with doing it with each other, because I know Paul's body so well, I've lived with him for so long, there's this familiarity that becomes a limitation, which is sort of what happens with a lot of making dance. You become so familiar with the pathways of your body, yeah, with the things that you do, even if it's about movement, even if you're working with different people, you can. But that's partly like the process of generally with a contemporary piece, quite, well, not generally, but quite often, and coming forward that we've been employed for throughout careers, is that we generate the material. And so it can end up that different artists are actually making the same dances, but material might not be that different because it's the same. Yeah.
So there's another reason we're in one of these sort of like mathematical problems to work in an effort to try to decolonize ourselves.
Yeah, just lose that sense of familiarity and look at it in a fresh. Yeah. Yeah, because really, like if I was dancing, I'd be like, some of you know the way that I would naturally dance, and it's not that. It's much more like that or something like that. So it's quite nice. Even though it feels self-conscious and clunky to work on through it, yeah.
Did you feel we got that clunkiness because of the clunkiness of the letters?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing is that we could, like, the end up there, I could have been like a little, you know, like I could have chosen a completely different way to generate that language, which would have created a whole lot of different rules, like an A is just a codification, it's a way to go, that's what A is every time I do it. No, I think there's a clunky, the word clunky isn't about the vocabulary itself, it's about
But
that's
the
process of
showing
that we're trying to make
in practice. And dance generally is a process of refining where things are made to look peaceful and fluid, I think the reason things, you know, if this is visually clunky, is because we're trying to really not dance the word body, we're trying to dance B-O-D-Y.
Yeah.
We're trying to create and maintain memory at this point in time. What we want to achieve is be able to do it much faster, and it wouldn't be visually coming at all. It would be far more danceable and convenient, but this is the restriction that we have as fleshy things, that we can't do it in a computer program. We have to take the time to culture it. Bodies, which is really annoying, actually. It's really, you know, that's why people just keep going with the same thing. People like Merce Cunningham, you know, masters, they keep pursuing the same agenda because there's just not enough time in a lifetime to get to do that. And I wonder if we need to do that, if we just ask a few questions.
Yeah, that's what we have to show you.
Yeah, so.
Because seductive. It's perhaps not more aesthetically considered with a black box. It's like, you know, initially you can sometimes be like, oh, you can go into space, it's kind of beautiful. And you'll be seduced by it.
It's about focusing down your perception.
Yeah.
That's what art gallery does.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I think it does. So as soon as you introduce anything, it's very...
And it's intimate, so intimate. So, yeah, there's a huge amount of consideration, I guess, to have a complex, beautiful visual arts practice. It's very broadly speaking, but, I guess, performing arts can kind of merge to, you know, visual entertainment or something, and so we feel much more applicable to this, and I can't hear greatly about being saved in.
I picked up like this book on art by a philosopher when I was like 12 or someone's house. And for some reason I remember the first line, it was like something like art deteriorates as it moves towards theatre. It's always stuck with me as something that's very true about how we feel about arts. The more it concerns itself with theatrical problems, the more it loses its inherent value, its special individual quality. So regarding that relationship and how moving towards visual arts, I think what we want to see more of in dance practice is that critical engagement, which is inherent and paramount in visual arts practice, and not considered frequently in New Zealand dance.
Yeah.
Of
saying things like, we don't just learn it, it's a language, we let it speak for itself, which is a great way of, like, of creating a whole lot of stuff that no one knows what.